2012, February 8th. Today is Astronomy 141, Lecture 24, The Jovian Planets. Yesterday we talked about the terrestrial planets, and they're the ones that are really of interest to us because, well, we're a terrestrial planet and we have life on us. So they're really the likely places to go looking for life. And we talked, in very broad brushstrokes about what the comparisons are among the terrestrial planets, especially their surfaces, their internal heat, and their atmospheres. And we saw how there's a number of factors there that seem to influence the presence of life and the type of atmosphere that you have. We're going to come back to those themes a little bit later when we look in more detail at the planet Mars, and then we'll pick it up again when we try to discuss towards the end of this section. We're building towards a general discussion of the concept of habitability. So we've got all these ideas running around, but we need to do a few more pieces before we can establish what is it that makes a world habitable and what is it that doesn't. And that will help focus on what we're going to go looking for. Today is kind of in that other, what makes things not habitable, we're going to talk about the Jovian planets. The Jovian planets are the giant planets of the solar system. We're going to contrast and compare the four Jovian or Jupiter-like planets that are in our solar system. We're going to find, in fact, that they're not all Jupiter-like. The Jupiter and Saturn are going to be the gas giants. These are mostly hydrogen and helium with really, really deep metallic hydrogen mantles and rocky cores. So we're going to see some things about their structure here that's of interest to us. Then we're going to meet Uranus and Neptune, the outermost of the Jovians, turn out to be not gas giants, but ice giants. They have relatively thin hydrogen and helium atmospheres over very deep ice and rock mantles. So they're very different in structure, and they formed in a different way. We're going to be concerned with these, even though they're probably not places we're going to look for life themselves. A lot of the planetary systems we're finding around other stars are right now these types of planets. So understanding them and what the implications of these are is going to be important to us for looking for the smaller, rocky, terrestrial planets that are of interest to us. In particular, one of the things that makes them, we think, not habitable in the sense that we understand it, is they have very different kinds of atmospheres. They have what are called reducing atmospheres. A reducing atmosphere is one that's dominated by hydrogen chemistry. And finally, we're going to see that while the Jovian planets themselves may not be so interesting as the potential abodes for life, even perhaps some life form we don't understand because it's a very different kind of chemistry, reducing chemistry versus oxidizing chemistry going on, they also have retinues of moons, some of which are in fact six of the seven giant moons in our solar system. And so it's not going to be these planets, but some of these planets' giant moons that may in fact be good places to be looking for life. They're solid surfaces, and we're going to see later on, next week, that some of them have properties that make them very attractive. But we're not there yet. We've got to get a little ways into the process. So today, the conversation is going to be about the Jovian planets. If you look down at our solar system, the outer planets of the solar system are all these gas giants and ice giants. We leave the rocky planets behind. The really big dominant bodies out there are the gas giants. The gas giants are Jupiter and Saturn. They're the innermost in our system at 5 and 10 astronomical units away from the Sun. The ice giants, Uranus and Neptune, are at 20 and 30 astronomical units from the Sun. Those of you who got your notes early will see 20 and 20. Oops, a little bit of quality control there. It should be 20 and 30. Are these outer two, the white and the blue orbit, respectively. So the first thing that comes to mind, when becomes apparent when you look at the properties of the gas giants, is they're way in the outer parts of the solar system. Mars, the outermost of the terrestrial worlds, is at 1.44 AU from the Sun. These start at about 5.1, 5.2 for the orbit of Jupiter, and go all the way out to 30. So this is really a huge change in the scale of the solar system. Part of this has to do with the fact that they're far from the Sun. It's colder out there. You can form ices, and you can, particularly, you're colder, and you can hang on to more gases. And so this idea that you have to be fairly big and you have to be fairly cold to hold on to a really heavy atmosphere of hydrogen helium becomes writ large out here. You need to be out where most of the raw material is to build these planets. They're huge. The gas giants really do deserve the term giants. So these are Jupiter and Saturn. These are spacecraft images now, which are shown relative to the size of the Earth. So I've done the computer scaling here to make them their right relative sizes. Jupiter is 11 times larger in radius than the Earth and 318 times the mass. Saturn is 95 times the mass of the Earth and about 9.5 times in radius. So they're very similar sizes, but very different masses, between 318 and 95 Earth masses. Jupiter is a lot denser. There's a lot more going on than there is around Saturn. Of course, Saturn is recognizable, not just for being a gas giant, but for these beautiful rings, which are really interesting by themselves, but they're not going to interest us in this class. They're just pretty. And here's the Earth by comparison of scale. The interiors of these are basically no solid surface. These things are all atmosphere, but below that atmosphere, the pressures rise so high that the properties of gases become kind of weird. So at the very top, what we see on the surface of these is we're seeing the tops of the clouds. These are entirely cloud-decked atmospheres. You're seeing pretty much ices. There's water ice, ammonia ice, maybe a little bit of methane ice and some complex organics up there. But for the most part, you're seeing the cloud tops. When you go below the cloud tops, the pressure rises very rapidly. These are big, heavy atmospheres with strong gravity fields because these are very massive planets. And you very quickly get into an atmosphere that's dominated by hydrogen. These are hydrogen-helium atmospheres. Their composition, on average, looks a lot like the composition of the Sun. It's not exact. There are some differences that are important, as we're going to get to in just a second. But for the most part, it's very different than we saw in the terrestrial worlds. The terrestrial worlds had solid surfaces, silicates and iron. Their atmospheres, carbon dioxide, water vapor, nitrogen, and on the Earth, a little bit of oxygen. On these atmospheres, it's hydrogen, primarily in the form of molecular hydrogen, H2, helium, and then everything else is just an afterthought. 90-odd percent of the composition of these is hydrogen helium. It's like 99%, 90, 93% or something like 90. Never mind. It's 90 big percent. Just pulling a blank today. When you get deeper into the atmosphere, you have the weight of these immense atmospheres on top of you with the strong gravity of all the mass below your feet. And you actually reach a point when you get down there that hydrogen ceases to be a gas and actually turns into basically a liquid metal. Calling it a liquid, though, is kind of a stretch. It's a metallic form of hydrogen that occurs only under extreme pressures. Millions of atmospheres pressure. I believe the threshold is somewhere about 2 or 3 million atmospheres equivalent. We've made metallic hydrogen only under very special kinds of diamond anvils in very small quantities here on the Earth. It only exists under high pressure. So this is telling you the presence of this metallic hydrogen is part of having these immensely heavy atmospheres, and then it's this metallic hydrogen all the way down until finally we get to sort of the pit, the kernel of these planets, is in fact a rock and ice core. Now, I've drawn these again. These cutaways are computer drawings, but I've shown the Earth here in the proper scale. The sizes of these rock and ice cores can be as much as 10 times the mass of the Earth, but they're under such high compression, they're actually physically smaller than the Earth. This is very highly compressed rock and ice. So when you think rock and ice core, don't think like rock and ice like we walk around on today. The stuff we see on the surface of the Earth is uncompressed rock. And, okay, it's not ice right now. It's kind of mush, slush. But ice and rock on the Earth is not under compression. This is under the compression of 100 or 200, 300 Earth masses worth of junk. So you've got in the core of Jupiter, for example, maybe a 15 Earth mass core at the upper end of its estimate of the mass, and 300 Earth masses of hydrogen and helium crushing down upon it. These things never, ever have a solid surface. There's nowhere you can stand. There's nowhere where you can distinguish that anything is different from anything else except by the fact that your composition changes. You go from being metallic hydrogen to kind of rock and ice. The same thing's true over in Saturn, but Saturn is a lower density world. It's only 95 times the mass of the Earth, packed into a roughly similar size. So we've got 318 times the mass of the Earth inside 11 Earth radii. Here I've got 95 times the mass of the Earth packed into about 10 Earth radii. So they're very similar in size. Less mass packed in the volume means low density. Density over here is greater than the density of water. Density of Saturn is less than the density of water. Not surprisingly, the outer atmosphere is much bigger before it turns metallic. You've got to go off a lot deeper before you get to the high pressures where metallic hydrogen forms. And you have a somewhat smaller seed at the base. The estimates of the masses of these central rocky cores is very difficult to make. You can't measure it directly, so you have to measure it by inference on the structure of the planet. And the estimates are sort of between 5 and 10 Earth masses. There's a pretty big range in there. But all told, these are really big gas balls. They're basically big self-gravitating gas bags. Because they're self-gravitating gas bags, they actually produce their own energy internally. Now, we've been used to seeing the sun producing energy by nuclear fusion. The Earth has a source of energy inside from radioactive decay, but it's really tiny. Most of the heat inside the Earth is a combination of radioactive decay and leftover heat of formation. If we look at these planets not in visible light but in infrared, they actually glow in the dark. They're actually putting out more energy than they receive from the sun. So they're net shining more energy from inside than they get from the sunlight falling on top of them. Now, part of that's because, of course, they're far away from the sun, right? Jupiter's 5 times further away from the sun than the Earth, so it gets 5 squared or 25 times less sunlight. In round numbers, Saturn is 10 times further away from the sun than the Earth, and so it gets 10 squared or 100 times less sunlight than the Earth. So that kind of helps the effect, but still, they're producing a lot of internal energy. The source of that energy is actually a steady gravitational contraction. These things are still shrinking. They're actually slowly collapsing under their own weight. Their pressure, the outward pressure of gas, is not enough to counteract the gravity pulling on all parts of these planets. So they're slowly shrinking in size. This means that this is giving you a source of heat to keep their interiors hot. These are really crazy places. So here's what they look like. You're seeing the heat leaking out from between the cold clouds here on Jupiter. This picture of Saturn, you're seeing the heat leaking out of the cold clouds, but there's a little bit of a composite, there's a little bit of sunlight. They couldn't get all the sunlight out of this picture, and you're getting a little bit of reflected sunlight off the ring. So it's a really pretty picture, but pay attention to the red part. That's the internal heat of these planets leaking out. That internal heat powers a tremendous amount of weather on these planets. These things have violent winds. The average wind speed on Saturn, for example, is 1,000 miles per hour. You would not want to be hanging out in the atmosphere of Saturn. These are very different kinds of places. So the gas giants just are, they're just plain different. They're giant gas bags, they produce their own energy from contracting under gravitational contraction, and they're huge. 95 and 300 times the mass of the Earth in our solar system. In other planetary systems, as we're going to see later in the course, we've found planets that are getting up to 10, 15, 20 times Jupiter, 1,000 Earth mass kinds of things. So they're very large gas bags, they're very common. This shouldn't be too surprising. They're made out of the same stuff as most of the universe, hydrogen and helium. When the sun formed, this is basically formed out of the gas that did not go into our sun, but in fact was out in the outer portions of the solar disk and collapsed onto these objects. We'll say a little bit later in the class about why we expect gas giants to be relatively common in the universe. The other types of Jovian planets are Uranus and Neptune, the ice giants. When I first taught this class maybe 20 years ago, not this class, but in this class on basic astronomy of the solar system 20-odd years ago, we pretty much lumped Uranus and Neptune together as gas giants. But only after really analyzing the data from the two spacecraft encounters and new models of the interiors of planets did people begin to realize that their internal structures were actually quite different than those of Jupiter and Saturn. They're denser, they're smaller. They tend to be a little bit smaller in size, 14 times the mass of the Earth and 4 Earth radii versus 17 and 4 Earth radii for Neptune. So Uranus on the left, Neptune on the right, and again, Earth shown for scale. And again, just to assure you, I don't expect you to memorize these numbers. These are to set things in scale. I'm never going to ask these on a test. But do know the relative sizes. Bigger to smaller is good enough. So these things are different. They're not as much mass. They didn't grow as big, which means their atmospheres are probably not quite as deep. If we slice them open, we get a big surprise. What we find is, in fact, their hydrogen-helium atmospheres, the things that give us the outer appearance of the cloud decks, are much shallower than we saw on Jupiter and Saturn. And before you get very far down, you actually get into a layer of ices that actually go down as if it was kind of an icy mantle. And finally, you get down to rocky cores, which are kind of Earth mass-ish kind of size. See, again, you get this sort of Earth-sized rock at the bottom, and again, here again is the Earth shown for relative scale in the correct proportions. But then you're surrounded by this sort of slushy ice. Now again, this is not ice like we see outside on a snowy day. This is ice under heavy compression. So it's going to act a little weird. It's ice, but it's hotter than normal ice. It's actually above the melting point for ice if it was sitting on top of a planetary surface. And it's kind of slushy. It's not solid frozen. Don't think of this as a block of ice with a crystal lattice. It's kind of like the consistency of silly putty. In fact, it's got about the same consistency as the molten rock in the Earth's mantle. That's why, in fact, they're kind of the ice analogs of the rock mantles we see in the terrestrial planets. So they're very different internal structures. They had very different formation. These things formed way out in the outer solar system. In the outer solar system, you're far enough away from the sun, 20 times the distance of the Earth to the sun, so 400 times less sunlight, 30 times the distance of the Earth to the sun, 30 squared, or 900 times less sunlight falls on the surface of these worlds. It's a lot colder out there, and you have things, not only water ices, but you have ammonia ice and methane ice forming in these outer portions of the solar system. One of your homework problems has you work in detail. What is the point at which in our solar system methane ice goes from a gas in the warmer inner parts of the solar system to a frozen bit in the outer part of the solar system? Just kind of tamp down this idea of temperatures changing as you go out. It gets colder and colder as you get further from the sun. So these things are really different. They had different formation histories. But again, common feature from the point of view of looking for life, reducing chemistry. These are mostly hydrogen atmospheres, therefore they're dominated by hydrogen chemistry. There's nowhere to stand. There are no solid surfaces on these things. Now, maybe you could think about things, you know, flying through the atmospheres, and people have imagined them in science fiction sense, but there's no place for standing liquid water or liquid of any kind. These are very dense, gaseous atmospheres. These are probably not places where life as we understand it arose. And we're really not sure, given the differences of chemistry and the differences of structure, we're not going to really look for much life on these things. One of the clues to why they are different, and I've given you some of this information already, is the gas giants are hydrogen and helium rich for two reasons. Number one, they're really big. And number two, they formed in a place that was relatively cold. So they could start to hold on to gas when they were small, and then that gas made their gravity hold on to the gas, their gravity goes up. As their gravity goes up, the more you can hold on to, the more you can hold on to, the more you can grab. And they just hoover the gas up around them. So once you get above a certain size, you literally turn into a vacuum cleaner for the gas around you during formation. It's a combination of starting out in a cold place and then growing really big. If you grow big enough, you can hold on to anything. So again, this is going to be, you know, your friend in this section of the class. This is the plot of the temperature of the outer atmosphere versus the escape speed, which is a measurement of the mass of the body. The bigger the object, the higher the escape speed, more gravity to hold on to you. So when we get out to the position of the gas giants, Jupiter and Saturn, and the ice giants, Uranus and Neptune, we're talking about temperatures now that are just over 100, 150 degrees Kelvin. And in the case of Neptune, you're already dropping down to temperatures 70, 60, 50 degrees Kelvin. This is really cold. In normal temperature and pressure situations on the Earth, just to put that in scale, 79 degrees Kelvin is where the nitrogen in this air would liquefy. And if I brought in a vial of liquid nitrogen, it would be 79 degrees Kelvin. So these have gas temperatures on their outer edges, which are colder than liquid nitrogen temperatures, at least certainly on the surfaces of Neptune and Uranus. Jupiter and Saturn are a little bit hotter. Part of that's because of internal heating coming up from below, as well as sunlight. But what really helps them hold on to their gas, in addition to being cold, the gas is moving slower, their gravity is huge. And so the escape speed from these planets is way above even the hydrogen atomic escape speed. And so they can hold on to everything. Now, they started out as Earth mass size cores, little seeds, a couple Earth masses. They would have started out down here. Earth mass is about there. So they already started out, we're in this place. Notice if you start out with Earth mass here, you start out at the distance of Jupiter. Hydrogen you can actually hold on to with your, you can't quite hold on to hydrogen atomic, but you can hold on to helium and atomic hydrogen. And most of the hydrogen is molecular hydrogen, the blue line and the green line. So if you're here, you can already hold on to these because even though you're small, you're cold. And then as you build up, they just run away vertically into growing into these massive sizes. So that's why they're so big. They were in a place which was cold enough for them to hold on to the first bits of hydrogen and helium that they could grab from the solar neighborhood. And when they grew bigger, they could hold on to even more, and you literally get, for at least a while, a runaway growth to very, very large sizes. Whereas down here with Earth and Venus, you're in the inner solar system. When you form, you're too hot to hang on to the dominant gas around you, hydrogen, helium, so you never start that big buildup. Whereas these guys literally snowball. And in fact, that idea of snowballing is correct. There's a point somewhere down in here between the orbit of Venus, between the orbit of Mars and the orbit of Jupiter called the snow line. It's the place where interior to that, you don't get much ice, you don't get much everything stays gas, whereas outside you get ices and gas. Yes, sir. Very good question. The reason why they are to the right is this is the temperature of the upper atmosphere, right? Because gas doesn't escape from the surface. Gas evaporates from the top of the upper atmosphere. And if you remember way back when we talked about the atmosphere of the Earth, the very thin outer atmosphere of the Earth at the top of what's called the thermosphere is actually very hot. So that's very good. That's very observant. Venus is the same way. Mercury has no atmosphere, so this is the equilibrium temperature of its surface, because the atmosphere has been stripped off, same as the moon down here. Now, it's a very good question, very observant. So, again, to sort of reiterate the major differences now, let's put all the Jovians up, Jupiter, Saturn, Uranus, and Neptune, lay them down alongside each other with the Earth for scale. The Jovian planets have no solid surfaces. They're gas bags, or gas bags on the outside, and underneath that, it's hydrogen and helium, down into either you have a metallic hydrogen in rocky core, in the case of the gas giants, or slushy ice mantles in a rock core, in the case of the ice giants. No place to stand, no place to swim. There's no place for you to have liquids, there's no place for you to have solids. It's all gas until you get so far in the interior that you're under high pressure conditions where you're not going to get the kinds of chemistry that's conducive to life, even stuff we can barely imagine. The other major difference is composition. These are mostly hydrogen and helium. Because hydrogen is the dominant element in this in these atmospheres, the chemistry is going to be dominated by hydrogen chemistry. We call hydrogen chemistry reducing chemistry, to contrast that with oxidizing chemistry, in which the dominant chemistry is the formation of oxygen compounds. What are the dominant compounds of hydrogen chemistry? Hydrogen molecule, H2. Water, well, we got to do something with the oxygen. It's going to grab all the hydrogen around is going to grab every oxygen and pretty much form just H2O. Any carbon around is going to get soaked up by hydrogen and form the simplest carbon hydrogen compound, methane, CH4. Any nitrogen that happens to be around is going to get grabbed up by the hydrogen and form the simplest nitrogen hydrogen compound, ammonia, NH3. And you get helium, which is chemically inert, so it just stays helium. So reducing chemistry means you take your oxygen, carbon, nitrogen, and hydrogen, and you're going to form molecular hydrogen, water, methane, ammonia. Hydrogen chemistry dominates. The terrestrial planets in the warmer parts of the solar system are dominated by oxidizing chemistry, by oxidizing atmospheres. Therefore, they're very poor in hydrogen. They're too small and they're too hot to hang on to significant amounts of hydrogen. And virtually no helium. In fact, the helium that's on the Earth is bubbling up from the radioactive decay in the middle. So what happens? You're going to be dominated by oxygen, carbon, and nitrogen. Hydrogen's rare. So what happens? Any hydrogen that's around gets grabbed by oxygen and forms into water. Carbon, there's no hydrogen to form methane, so it forms carbon dioxide. Nitrogen, yeah, nitrous oxides can form in the presence of sunlight, but you're more likely to form N2. So again, the same basic mix of heavy elements, carbon, nitrogen, oxygen, that we've seen are very abundant, and they turn out to be essential for life. You put them in a hydrogen-rich environment, you get molecular hydrogen, water, methane, and ammonia. You put those same elements together, carbon, nitrogen, and oxygen, in a hydrogen-poor environment, and you get oxygen chemistry, and you get instead water, carbon dioxide, and nitrogen being the dominant forms, dominant molecular forms. So, same basic starting point, all I've changed in terms of the proportions of carbon, nitrogen, and oxygen to a first approximation, but I've changed the amount of available hydrogen. So reducing atmospheres are when you're hydrogen-rich. Oxidizing atmospheres occur when you're hydrogen-poor. And then oxygen turns out to be the most reactive of the carbon, nitrogen, and oxygen that are left. That's why these planets have reducing atmospheres and why the terrestrial planets, which are hydrogen-poor, have oxidizing atmospheres. This is pretty useful to us because these are the interesting bioavailable forms of these elements. We don't know if there's any bioavailability among these. Well, we know methane can be bioavailable. Ammonia is actually toxic on Earth. Water, well, it's just water. You know, water is water. It's a common denominator. And hydrogen, it's not a good thing to have around present to oxygen. Think Hindenburg, and you get the basic idea. Hydrogen molecule coming in contact with O2, spark, bad news. Big flames, really fast, not fun to be near. So the planets themselves, the gas planets themselves, sort of cease to be interesting to us as possible abodes for life. Their chemistry is not going to be rich in the kinds of chemistry that we want. Water's available, but it's all in gas form, or worse, at the colder out of reaches, in ice form. There's no place for liquid water to form or pool because you need a solid surface. So we're not going to be as interested in the planets themselves from a point of view of life. They've got a lot of raw materials, but they have no way to organize it in a way we can understand. So maybe there's something else we can look at. What we can look at is that these planets don't come alone in space. They have moons, and these moons provide solid surfaces. So we're in the outer part of the solar system where ices, which are very, very rich in organics, are available, and these are solid surfaces. But the downside is, it's the outer part of the solar system, and it's cold, which means those gases are likely to be formed into ices at various places. But even with those caveats, let's take a look at the planet, the moon systems of each of these giant gas giants, and see if there's any possibilities. Let's start with Jupiter. Jupiter currently has 63 named moons. There's a few more candidates. We're finding them all the time. But they're getting kind of small. They're getting kind of kilometer size. So we're getting kind of down to debris. Of those 63 moons, four of them are of particular interest to us. The so-called Galilean moons, because they were discovered by Galileo Galilei in 1610 with his telescope. These are large bodies. They're bigger than 3,000 kilometers across. If these were out free-floating around the sun, they would be dwarf planets. They're spherical and they're differentiated. They have silicate surfaces and iron cores. They also have an awful lot of ice on them. The other 59 moons are small. They're under 200 kilometers in size. The gravity does not shape these into spheres. They tend to stay kind of irregular. Some of them are kind of like, you know, dirty potato shaped. They tend to be undifferentiated. There's never been a separation between the metals and the silicates, like you see in a large gravitating body that was once molten on the interior. In fact, a lot of these are probably captured asteroids from early in the solar system. The total mass is really small. You take one of the smallest of the Galilean moons, Europa, all the other 59 moons barely add up to 1/1,000th of the mass of Europa. So this really is, the moon system of Jupiter is really the inner four moons, the Galilean moons, and a bunch of debris. So let's ignore the debris and take a look at those Galilean moons. Those are interesting to us. The Galilean moons are all giant moons. In fact, three of the four, Ganymede, Callisto, and Io, are bigger than our moon. Only Europa is smaller, and not by much, right? It's 3,500 versus 3,100 kilometers in radius. The biggest of these is Ganymede, which is the largest moon in the solar system. It's 5,300 kilometers in size. It's bigger than Mercury. If this thing was free-floating, this sucker would be a planet by our current definitions. So these things are really big. The differences are, when we start looking in detail at their properties, and we're going to see a bit more of this, we're going to go into more detail next week, is Ganymede and Callisto, while they're big, a lot of that bulk is because they're bulked up on ice. This is the cold outer reaches of the solar system where bare ices can exist out on the surface. In particular, bare water ice can exist in a vacuum. It doesn't sublimate away. It's cold enough for that, and so you bulk these things up. You take silicates, but you put a very strong admixture of ices on top of that. So their density is lower than the density of just pure rock all by itself. Io and Europa, on the other hand, while they are rich in ices, are much richer in silicates. Their density is higher, and they actually are going to be the ones that are somewhat interesting to us in terms of their structure. Now, we're going to come back to these next week in detail. Today, I want to introduce you to them. of particular interest to us is going to be this last little moon down here on the end, Europa. You'll notice there's very few craters on its surface. It's a very smooth and therefore geologically very young surface. The current thinking is, in fact, this is an ice-encased moon, and there's a good possibility that it has a sub-ice ocean of liquid water. And we'll talk about that a little bit next week. That is one of the candidates for places to find liquid water, and hence some of the prerequisites for life elsewhere in our solar system. I'll just mention it today. We'll qualify that as we go through the rest of the week. Saturn, further out, less sunlight, a lot colder, also has 60-odd moons. I think that number has actually been increasing recently. It has only one giant moon. That's the moon Titan. It's one of the largest moons in the solar system, second largest moon in the solar system. There's a bunch of them that are spherical, but now they're spherical because they're ices. And ice is less strong than rock, and it's easier for gravity to shape it into a sphere. They range in size from about 1 kilometer up to 1,500 kilometers. That's in radius. There are bigger ones, bigger than 300 kilometers, tend to be spherical. Those less than 300 kilometers are irregular. Their densities are all low. Rock is typically about 3 grams per cc compared to the Earth. This is between 0.3 and 1.5 grams per cc. I'll remind you that water is 1 gram per cc. Ice is less dense than water. So these things are mostly icy or rock and ice admixtures. Pretty simple. The other thing we see on a lot of these worlds, but not all of them, is that most of these worlds have very heavily cratered, really geologically ancient surfaces. They're primary surfaces, maybe a little bit of secondary volcanism, but the volcanism here is actually liquid water volcanism. It's ice volcanism. We're not in Kansas anymore. We're in the outer cold parts of the solar system, and life gets weird. The ones of interest to us, in particular, are the largest of these moons, the so-called spherical moons. Titan is the biggest of these. It has an atmosphere. So far, every moon we've seen so far, the moon, Ganymede, Callisto, Europa, Io, don't have much of an atmosphere, or only really thin atmospheres. But now we're 10 times further from the sun than the Earth is. We get 100 times less sunlight. These places are a lot colder, a lot colder. As a consequence, if it's small and cold, it can hang on to an atmosphere. And Titan, even though it's smaller, can hold on to an atmosphere because it's so unbelievably cold. And in fact, Titan is the only moon in the solar system with a heavy atmosphere. It's a heavy nitrogen-methane atmosphere, N2 and CH4. Isn't that interesting? We're going to come back to Titan next week because we want to take a much closer look at this dude because something very interesting is going on. The atmospheric pressure on the surface is 1.5 Earth atmospheres. This is a serious atmosphere. This isn't your, you know, thin, can't breathe it without, you know, spacesuit apparatus Mars type atmosphere. This is a heavier atmosphere proportionally than the Earth on the surface of Titan. It's a weird place. The other moons, Dione, Rhea, there's all kinds of names for these. Mostly we'd sort of ignore them. We'd look at them and say, yeah, they're kind of ice balls, they're spherical, they got heavily cratered surfaces, except for this guy right here, Enceladus. When we got a really close look at Enceladus when the Cassini spacecraft went by, the first thing that really caught our eye, we kind of got a hint from a Voyager, but Cassini really nailed it down, was there were not very many craters on Enceladus. It actually had a geologically young surface. And as we'll see next week, there's actually water vapor fountaining out of Enceladus. It's a place where there's liquid water. So suddenly, in Titan, we thought was interesting. Enceladus is also going to be interesting. So next week, when we go back to the outer moons to look at possibilities for life there, we're going to look at the two possibly interesting, from a point of view of chemistry and life potential, children of Saturn, Titan and Enceladus. The other moons, they're kind of old, cold, and dead. And we're not going to be too much more interested in them from there. Now we're going to go out to Uranus. 20 times further away from the sun than the Earth, 400 times less sunlight. Uranus is an ice giant. There are 27 moons, but none of them is big enough to be a giant moon. Two of them, the five biggest ones, a couple of them are spherical. One of them, Umbriel, is non-spherical. All of them have heavily cratered surfaces. They're icy. They're old. They're cold. They're dead. There's a little bit of funky activity going on in Ariel and Miranda, but for the most part, from the point of view of looking for life, these are frozen ice balls. We can't even imagine life living on these things. Neptune. Neptune has 13 moons, the largest of which is a giant moon, Triton, which is probably a captured Pluto-like object, dwarf planet from the outer solar system. We have some clue that it's captured because it's actually orbiting backwards. It's actually in a retrograde orbit, which isn't going to last long. That's a suggestion that it's in fact been dynamically captured. But most of the rest of the moons are kind of little dark little ice balls. They're irregular in shape. They're heavily cratered. Triton does not have a heavily cratered surface, though. It's relatively geologically young, but it is extremely frozen. In fact, it more resembles, like I said, one of these icy dwarf planets like Pluto and Eris than it does like the other icy spherical moons we've seen in the inner portions of the giant gas planets. Triton is a really pretty cool place. It's geologically young. It's being heated internally by tides. So it's internal heat that's making some things go on, but it has no atmosphere, and it's really cold. There are actually geysers, it turns out, on Triton. But the geysers are spewing liquid nitrogen, not water. Water's like rock on Triton. This is a really cold place. We're 30 astronomical units out, 900 times less sunlight than the Earth. This is a place that's going to be really cold. In fact, the surface of Triton is one of the coldest places we know in the entire solar system. So Triton, while it's a fascinating place from a point of view of this sort of geology, it's not long going to be of interest to us when it comes to looking for life. It's an ice ball. It's plain frozen hell. So what's going on here? Well, a couple things are drawing our interest to these giant moons. So now I've drawn, the giant moons are now orange in this diagram. We've seen this picture the other day. This plots how far away you are from the sun. So the way you want to think about this is distance from the sun means less sunlight for this plot. So as we go out, we're getting colder and colder. We're also dynamically close to the moon here. It's up on the Earth. It's fairly close and warm. The four giant moons of Jupiter are all piled up together. They orbit Jupiter. Titan is the giant moon of Saturn, so it's in the orbit of Saturn. Uranus doesn't get to play. It doesn't have any giant moons. And Triton, little t, is tied to Neptune. You'll notice they're all pretty similar in terms of their mass. This is the mass expressed in units of the Earth's mass. So they all range in size from a few hundredths down to a few thousandths of the mass of the Earth. Pretty similar in size. Very, very different in composition. The moon is silicates and iron. It's just like the terrestrial planets. These guys are a mix of silicates, rock, and ices because we're out beyond the ice line. And we're out in the places where ices can form stably out in the solar system. In here, it's too hot for the ices. They, poof, sublimate away to gas. See homework number one, problem number one. Titan is out here. It's much colder, but it's also got very similar composition. Again, a rocky ice mixture. And finally, we get out to Triton. Triton, actually, it's interesting. It lands in size and position with Pluto and Eris. Triton probably is an interloper in this game. It probably came in and was captured from the outside. And again, part of the evidence for that is the fact that it orbits backwards. So we're going to kind of ignore Triton, but we're going to pay attention to this group in here. They got ices. That's really interesting because ices carry relatively heavy organics, carbon compounds. The problem is how you make it warm enough to be interesting. And we're going to have to wonder how that's going to play out. So we'll just leave that question hanging. Why would we stay interesting if they're so cold? Wouldn't they be frozen? Wouldn't water be solid? But in fact, there are going to be ways in which you can make water liquid, in the case of Europa, or Titan. Titan, it's not going to be liquid water. It's going to be liquid methane, just to give away the hint. A little different fluid, which actually behaves like water under cold, high-pressure temperatures. We always think of methane as a gas. It's natural gas, right? Well, if you make it cold enough and put it under pressure, it actually starts behaving like water. It has three phases, solid, liquid, and vapor. And it goes through a cycling of those phases, just like water cycles on the Earth. So things can get awfully interesting when we're out here. Is that important? We don't know yet. But keep that little factoid in the back of your head. We're going to come back to it. The other piece that makes us interesting for Titan is the fact that Titan has an atmosphere. I've already kind of given that away. Let me show you this plot. We've seen it before. Again, escape speed of the gravity of the planet, the surface temperature, or the temperature at the top of the atmosphere for the planet, or the surface if it doesn't have an atmosphere, And we see that Titan lands over here. It's out in the outer solar system. It's cold. It's out around Saturn. The temperature on the surface is pretty cold, 90 degrees Kelvin. That's pretty cold. But it turns out to put it above the escape speed for 90 degrees Kelvin, for methane, water vapor, nitrogen and carbon dioxide, and carbon dioxide. Now, the problem is that 90 degrees Kelvin part. At 90 degrees Kelvin, you may remember from your homework problem, methane becomes a gas at 40 degrees Kelvin, so methane is still gaseous out here. Water ceases to become a gas at around 300 degrees, 273, 250 degrees Kelvin. So you got to be out, kind of here. Beyond this point, water becomes ice. Nitrogen doesn't become, goes from gas to liquid at 80 degrees Kelvin in round numbers. So nitrogen is still gaseous. It doesn't become gaseous until down around here somewhere. Carbon dioxide becomes gaseous at about, do the math right, 170 degrees Kelvin? No. Minus 100 degrees Celsius. It's about minus 100 degrees Celsius, 273. Yeah, it's about 170. So carbon dioxide becomes gaseous down around here. Gaseous to salt. It turns into dry ice. So dry ice is about a minus 100 degrees C. It's 273 minus 170 degrees Kelvin. Yeah, so it's about right there. So kind of out around the Galilean moons here, where they cluster in here, carbon dioxide becomes a solid. So the only gases you have left to work with are methane and nitrogen. But Titan's gravity is big enough to hold on to methane and nitrogen at 80 degrees Kelvin, despite having such a low escape speed. Right? The moon has only a slightly smaller escape speed than Titan, but it can't hold on to a thing. The moon is airless. Titan has managed to build a big, heavy nitrogen-methane atmosphere. No water. Water's frozen. Water is like rock on Titan. No carbon dioxide. Carbon dioxide would snow out as a solid on the surface of Titan. But nitrogen and methane can exist. So again, part of the general lessons of comparative planetology here. To have an atmosphere, you either have to be really big, Jupiter, Saturn, Uranus, and Neptune, big enough to hold on to stuff when it's warm, or if you're small, you gotta be cold. In the case of Titan, the places that have atmospheres in our solar system are what? The gas giants? Earth and Venus have water, nitrogen, carbon dioxide. There's no methane out there because it's oxygen chemistry. Mars, it's above the line too. It's smaller, but it's further out. Has a carbon dioxide, bit of nitrogen, bit of water vapor. Titan, it's in the outer solar system, the land of hydrogen chemistry, has nitrogen and methane. Everything else doesn't have an atmosphere. So these are places to go looking for interesting things that happen in atmospheres. There's only one place that's interesting, Titan. Questions? Okay, I will see you all tomorrow.